What up, what up, what up, what up? It's your boy, Mad Hatter, the guy that usually doesn't do a lot of speaking on anyone's show, no appearances on nobody's records, the one in, businessman, entrepreneur, giver.
I like that.
I got no more titles, Ken. all around good guy. I guess he's a good guy now. If you would ask me that maybe 10, 15 a year, I might have
said something. Cam is good.
It's Chameleonaire, ladies and gentlemen. My first question, Cam, I'm just curious. Are you still signed to Universal?
No, I'm actually not. I'm independent, but I still do business with them because, you know, we have a relationship with Riding Dirty and all the stuff that I did.
They administer
my publishing. So yeah,
they're going to hold on to that till the end.
Yeah, so we still share checks together. They still call me and, you know, ask me to, can they put a song in, you know, a movie? And I'm going to say yes if the money's right, you know?
Because I believe that. What's the guy's name? Monty?
Monty Lipman. And
he's
Avery
still
Lipman.
The same guy over there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. They got Drake. They got Post Malone. They got a lot of big wigs over there. Yeah.
Who signed you when you went over there? Who was responsible of signing you? Stealing you away from the paid in full record label.
Oh, that's a story for another day. But I was signed.
I never asked you that question. That might be a story for today, but go ahead.
Universal Republic is who I signed to. That's Avery Lipman and Monty Lipman. They're the ones who have Drake. You know, they're the ones who have Post Malone. Is before that. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was I was signed and there was a breakup in Universal where they split Universal into Universal Republic and Universal Motown. And then the higher ups in Universal and the Vivendi world said, you know what, we're going to take the millionaire and put him over here with Universal Motown, which was Sylvia Rhone. And that's when I ended up having the second part of my career there with, you know.
The first big hit that you had, Cam, was, it wasn't Riding Dirty.
Turn It Up.
Yeah. Did you know that was going to be a hit? Because you put Flip on the, Flip wasn't on the original, was he?
Yeah, he was. I don't think I had a version without him, but okay. it was a somewhat of a slow burn. But I think the hype of everybody there was already a movement from Houston, so everybody was expecting the wave from Houston to come, you know.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, I was associated with, you know, Slim Thug, Paul Wall, Mike Jones, everybody, and that underground fan base combined with that coming out on a major label, all that hype actually propelled me to do about 500,000 records when Turn It Up was out. So I noticed you said hit. Some people say Chameleonaire had one hit. They don't realize that Turn It Up actually was a hit. That was a top.
Turn It Up was a hit. I don't care about those people.
But Rise was so big it's hard for people to understand that because, you know, there's some other people that you could think about their one record that they had or two records that they had. Turn It Up actually peaked higher than a lot of those records. You know what I'm saying? So, and to this day, I still go perform and I perform Turn It Up last, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it just gets a good response. It's something about the beat, it's something about the energy of it that just gets the crowd hype, you know? So Flip and having another hometown hero on there, you know, it's just, you know, I love that song.
I think when they said that you only had one hit, you know what they're thinking about? That record went so big, pop.
Yeah.
Riding Dirty was, I hate to say it, Cam, and I know you ain't gonna like it. It turned into a pop record.
Nah, I know. I saw the crowd change, you know?
Well, yeah. I'm glad you, well, you know what? You and Paul always had an interesting crowd from the beginning, let's be honest. You always had, in the beginning, I think it was real underground, real street, and then because of your knowledge of the internet and all this and the way y'all talked about it, I think your base started to change sometime after you signed when you drifted away from Swisher House and came with us over at Paid in Full. It seemed like your crowd started to change. I could even see it visually when y'all would do shows. All of a sudden it was heavy Hispanic white kids coming out, and it wasn't like that in the beginning. Was it because of your internet savvy, you think? Was it because of the music you were doing? Because let's be honest, you guys were not cursing a lot and all that stuff. Your records were pretty much clean. A lot of people, you know, you said the N-word sometimes, but for the most part, it was clean records, unless you had guest appearances.
Yeah, I would say it was a combination of things. It was something, a part of it was the internet effect, because we did have an internet forum board kind of relationship with fans and people from Denver and all these other places were coming into the to the ecosystem. But I would say the secret weapon was a Paul Wall effect, you know?
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. I used to say it all the time, man. Me and Paul used to argue about this all the time because I remember, if you remember, Paul was the one that was a little bit more outgoing. You know what I'm saying? He was the one that was always smiling. I was the one that was always mean, you know, wondering why people were taking pictures of me, all that type of stuff. So I used to sit in the wings sometimes just looking at Paul, and I would see the white kid and how they would look when they're staring at Paul. And they would look at Paul like he was like the savior. And Paul used to not like that. He used to be like rebuking anything that's like about race, you know, like, you know, he wanted to be just a rapper. And they kept on talking about like white boy. He didn't want to hear all that. But when he would leave, they would look at me and be like, man, that's Cooper. But then they would look at Paul and be like, man, that's Paul Wall. Like, he was the one person that they were so shocked how he could get into this culture of all of these street black dudes and be cool. Like, they didn't understand it. And they were just like enamored by him. So I think a lot of them originally came and they started coming to try to figure out who he was. There's some confusion at first. They thought I was him, and I was the white guy, and he was the black guy. Like, and they started figuring it out, and it just started.
Because of your wordplay. Your wordplay is more technical than Paul's. Paul was real. Of the two, no disrespect, he was probably the more street.
By design, though, he was trying to do that. I was arguing with him, telling him, remember that song the other day on the album, Get Your Mind Correct?
Mm-hmm.
That was a hook that I'm on the hook, and I'm telling Paul, this you. This to the moon. I don't even know if he wanted to do it because it's something very clean and polished about it. You know, Paul, he gonna do sitting sideways. He trying to keep it. And I'm like, bruh, go to the moon, bruh. That's you, they savior, man. Let's go. He like, nah, he ain't trying to hear that, you know? But that's kind of why I was like, all right, you ain't gonna take the plate, Paul. I'm gonna take it. But you need to take this. This is you, you know? And, you know, I think that good balance is like, you know, that's what groups are made of. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're able to counterbalance each other, you know?
I love to hear when y'all talk about each other because y'all are very complimentary. Like, he'll always dumb himself down to you. You kind of like throw the ball back to him. Did you always, because I know y'all, you know, y'all kind of grew up together. Not kind of, you grew up together. Did you always know that Paul was skillful on the mic? Did you think he was a skillful MC?
Yeah, man. Paul always had something that I think that, you know how some people just stand out? He was always one of those people. You know what I'm saying? He always used to do things that stood out. You knew when Paul Wall was in the room, you know what I'm saying? Like, even the name Paul Wall, like, he tells a story. I was just like, why do they call you Paul Wall? He would say some story, you know, he would do the babbling talk. Like, I used to be looking at him like, man, who are you, man? You know? Like, who are you? Like, what are you trying to be? And it's not a surprise that he was successful. But I will say that I think that when it comes to lyrics, we pushed each other, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes I would do something and then Paul would say something, I'd be like, man, I gotta go a little bit harder, and then vice versa. And he always used to do that. He used to be like, ah, man, I'm gonna redo that because Cam over here killing it. And I'd be like, nah, that verse is dope, keep it. And then he would come back with something doper, you know? So I remember for a while, people were just really shocked because on the Swisher House tapes, we were the people that were very technical with our rhymes, you know? And it was in a time when everybody was kind of a little bit more raw and street with it. We were coming in with witty punchlines. We were, you know, Paul had like clever lines for days, and you could tell in his personality when you talk to him, he's gonna hit you with a clever bar just even when he's talking to you. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of flooded into the music and it just stood out, you know? And, you know, then I came with the melodies and that was it. It was like, once we started putting the singing on there and, you know, with the lyrics, it was just like, everybody was like, okay, this is dope, you know?
It seemed like y'all were always resistant to being a group. I'm just curious as to why was that? Because rumor was that y'all were forced by your record company to work together from an album perspective.
Is that a rumor? I don't know where that one. For real?
Y'all never really, because y'all always wanted to do your own things.
Oh, I don't know if it was not wanting to be in a group. I think it's like, you know, sometimes you just have creativity and creative thoughts. And, you know, you don't want to deal with the trying to convince somebody stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, you remember In Love With My Money. I don't even know Paul. I don't think Paul, he admits this.
Paul didn't like the record.
Yeah, he didn't like it. He thought it was a West Coast song. So when you deal with that enough as a group, you just want to be like, look, I want to do what I'm going to do, and you're going to do what you do. And it was more about that. It's more about creative freedom, you know? I think it was really a struggle about that. It wasn't like anything personal against Paul or anything like that, or vice versa. I just think that, you know, there's some things that he wanted to do, and he used to get frustrated that I used to be antisocial, and he wanted to go do all the events. He wanted to be out there. And I was just like, man, let's get in the studio. I was always the work guy. So, you know, you get to a point where you're like, look, I want to do what I want to do. You do what you want to do. But I don't think we ever was like, we was boys. Like, we felt like it was a group the whole time, you know, in my mind, you know.
I always felt that there was a little resistance there, but that could have just been from my perspective. It didn't seem like y'all ever really wanted to truly be a group. But
yeah, I don't remember even getting in a real argument, Paul.
No.
I don't remember getting in like any real, like, I hate you type of argument. If we ever argued, it was always like the next day it was like nothing happened, you know? Mm. So I don't recall. I know we did have the beef that everybody knows about, but even that was really about nothing if you really think about it. It really was just like at some point we kind of split apart. Everybody started talking like crazy, saying stuff to him, saying stuff to me. And then now we're blowing up. The money's coming in. We're getting the major deals. He's over there with people that might not mess with me. I'm over here with the people that might not mess with him. They saying stuff to me. They saying stuff to him. And the next thing you know, the fans is piling on. And it's just like, now you're in beef, you know? But if you really go back, it's just like, it ain't really much there, you know?
All right, I got you. I'm a circle back to some Paul Wall chameleonaire stuff later on in the program. Right now, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with you with the Bone Thugs and Harmony appearance on Versus. And your thoughts wow. on that. It was cool to see all that, but as of, you know, after everything subsided there, the fight and all that, I started seeing stuff online saying that, you know, they felt like it was Bone Thugs and Harmony versus the universe, because it seemed like there was so many guest appearances that 3-6 brought out. I guess they brought out Terrence Howard,
yeah.
Brought out Flip, they brought out, shoot, I can't even think of
it. Lil Wayne, LeChat.
Wayne, yeah.
Duke Deuce, y'all, everybody, yeah.
Now, y'all side, I think, on Bone side, I think.
It was just Lil Jon, I think, and me, and maybe one other person.
Yeah. So what's your assessment of that, and then your assessment of the fight and of all the verses that have been had? Do you have, I want to know your top three on the verses.
Got it. I ain't going to lie, I didn't want to do it. You know me, I don't know anything. But it was like, at first, I think it was 3-6 that actually pushed me there, because they actually were the ones that reached out at first. And it was like, yo, want you to come out with us? And then I was like, wait a second. I know I got a song with 3-6, Doughboy Fresh, but I can't do that, because then it's going to look crazy if I don't do Riding, then I'd have to do both. And they all weren't in sync with each other, knowing who was going to do what song. So I was just like, all right, like, we got to, you know. And then after that, I got calls from Bones Team, and it was like, hey, you know, you got to come out for this. And I'm like, man, here we go again. Now I'm about to be out here. I'm going to be on this stage. Everybody's going to be calling me for verses, thinking I'm just, you know, dropping mixtapes again, you know? Nothing wrong with that. But, you know, sometimes it could bring a lot of energy that I'm not really trying to have right now. And, you know, I thought about it. I was just like, you know what? Every time I ask Bone for anything crazy, like, they always come through, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of have an obligation to kind of, you know, do that. All the times when I needed him to come out to BET Spring Bling or whatever, he did it for me. You know what I'm saying? So I was just like, all right, I'm going to do it. But then I started asking all the questions that I asked. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be so crazy, man. That was why, you know, I pulled up in a bulletproof vest. Everybody was like, what the hell, Chameleon, I got a bulletproof vest on for? I was like, because I can. That's why. Because I can. No, I was just, you know, the moment was great, man. I thought it was a real hip hop moment. Seeing everybody there, seeing Wiz Khalifa, seeing everybody come out. It was a good vibe. I know they had a little tension halfway through that thing, but they made it right. And, you know, I feel like I was a part of a legendary moment, you know. And as far as Versus is concerned, I don't really know, man. I'm not the person that sits there and try to debate who's best between who. I just enjoy it, you know.
What's your favorites, though? You got some favorites.
Favorites? I like all of them. I like all of them. All the ones I saw. I like the Jeezy and Gucci. I thought that could have went a whole different direction, you know. So to see them roll and mature about it, to me, that's magic, you know. Yeah. And then I just think in this moment, everybody's dealing with so much over the past couple of years, and just, you know, you got something to kind of reset yourself. You know, a lot of people are getting in front of their TVs with their families. They, you know, get something to sip on, get some popcorn, and they're watching. It's a real event, you know. So it's dope seeing Swiss and Timbaland turn something like this into a real cultural phenomenon. It's a startup that has shown success. And a lot of people need to see examples of stuff like that. You know, they found a way to be innovative and take the culture and put it up on a high pedestal, and you know, that's dope, you know.
Well, it was good to see you do your thing up there, man, because I know you don't like to come out too often. I'm like you said, when people saw you on stage, their next question is, does this mean Cam is going back to mixtape? Is he dropping albums, or is he going to stay in his tech world? And that's just about the size of it. This was just a great moment in hip hop. And now you're going back to the West Coast and wherever the town is where they do all the, what they call it, Silicon Valley. And they do what they do. You know, is that what it's going to be now?
I'm going to do both. I'm still going to put out music, you know? I say that all the time, but people seem to never listen or hear me because I don't drop as frequently. You know, there are some records that I jump on every now and then. I do shows every now and then, not all the time. So I don't feel like I've ever really quit. But yeah, the tech stuff kind of rules my life nowadays. Investing, I'm doing a lot of stuff like that. I feel a responsibility to bring a lot of people into this world because I'm seeing so much opportunity. So I'm trying to find a way to just marry everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was successful during the music industry time when mixtapes and websites were popular. And now everything has evolved and changed. And there's so many new platforms, so many new resources that I feel like when you come back and release music, you can adopt all the new things that you learned and find a way to create a different type of success. So I'm about the future. I know a lot of my fans is thinking about the past. They want me to go back and rap on other people's beats, drop mixtapes, bring a website forum board back. But man, all the greatness that I see is always about people creating stuff in the future. You know,
did you anticipate
in the past, they always, I never see them win.
Did you anticipate all this stuff, Cam? And it seems like you did. Everything that's happening right now, you were always ahead of the curve. You were ahead when they had the ringtones. It seems like you're on top of the NFTs and the blockchains. I don't understand none of this stuff. I'm just watching from afar. Did you anticipate it going in this direction? You know, we're getting ready to get into this. What's this thing that Facebook going to start now?
Metaverse.
Yeah. Did you anticipate all this stuff happening?
I can't say I anticipated going to the level that it's at now, because if I could see the future, I'd probably be, you both would be billionaires right now, right? So I think that you can see the breadcrumbs in front of you. People just ignore them, you know? We hear all these things about investing and startups, and a lot of times we're in our emotions, going through life, not really thinking about it because we're stuck in the moment. But there are some people that think about the future all the time. So I feel like I'm a person that has always found a way to keep my eyes on what's coming next, you know? So if you really change your perspective and start doing that, you can start seeing things, you know? You can start seeing trends. You can start seeing where the world is heading. If one day you hear about this thing called the internet and you're like, nah, I don't want nothing to do with that. And then next thing you know, all your next door neighbors is on the internet. You should probably see that it's headed in that direction. Some people just don't care. They adopt things when it's too late. I realize the value in life of adopting things and figuring out things early. Yeah, you're gonna be wrong sometimes, but you know, that exercise will kind of get you understanding where stuff is headed. And then you'll see so much value. I like knowing what's happening in the future. I know what's coming, you know, like when ringtones was happening, I remember rappers was like, thought they was too gangster for ringtones. It was like, you see all these kids out here downloading these little songs and playing them on their phones. Like you don't care about that. And then eventually everybody jumped on that wave. And it's the same thing with all this stuff that's happening now. Like it's just cycles that keeps on repeating itself. Some people are ignoring the future. I'm a person that embraces it, you know? That's probably why it's one of my fans.
How can you get people of color more involved in this? It seems a lot of times when these things are happening, Black people and people of color, they get left out because of their lack of understanding what's going on. They don't get the information. They don't have the connects, whatever you want to call it. What can be done to make sure that, you know, we're not left behind again on this next wave? Because NFTs, blockchains, and like you said before, man, there's nothing you can do to stop what's happening. It is happening.
Yeah. I think that it's a few things. So first, this is a problem that everybody's always gonna be trying to solve, and nobody's gonna have the perfect answer for this. Because there's different type of people and people digest information differently. But I think there needs to be people out there that care about giving the information to people in a digestible way. Yes, you're going to bump into roadblocks and some people aren't going to hear you, but you know, your passion for your people and their prosperity will make you keep on giving them the information. But then you also have to find a way to do it digestible in a digestible way and not be preaching, because I'm a victim. I mean, I'm somebody that people can say has been preachy at times, but it was... it came from a good place. I was always trying to bring my people on. And sometimes when I'm telling them about this thing, it's like, oh, here you go again with that tech stuff, right? So now that's why you see me doing less talking then, because I realized that seeing is something special for people. Seeing is believing. When people see, then they're like, oh, I see why now. That's the best thing that's going to give me conviction, or the best carrot I could dangle in front of somebody to want to take an action, right? So, you know, people see me courtside, and then now they care about what I'm talking about. Like, what is he doing? There are people that saw me all the time and never talked to me. The minute they saw me courtside, they was like, oh, you must be doing something great. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, like, unfortunately, it's just the way of the world. So understanding that and finding that balance of education and motivation, but with a little bit of like showing them so they can see the example, I think that's what it takes. That's what I'm trying to do.
You know? So how are you trying to do that, Cam? Because I know I had a conversation with you before and I like explain NFTs and explain blockchains. You're like, you know what? Me trying to explain that is going to be, it's going to be a conversation that's way over people's heads. You already know that, but you gave a good example of how you could explain how people need to start getting into these things. If you can do that for me.
Yeah, so I think that everybody listening, you need to take the time to start diving in to everything that's happening right now in this technology space. Now, we all use Instagram, we all use Facebook, we all use Snapchat, all these things. And when you get on those platforms, there are younger people that understand them. And you know how sometimes older people might get on a Snapchat and they're like, oh, I don't get this, I don't understand it, and they just fight technology. You don't want to be that person in life. You don't want to be the person that's fighting technology. But I understand when we start talking about blockchain, smart contracts, NFTs, that stuff can be confusing. So what I want everybody to understand is it doesn't have to be as confusing as you think. You need to take the steps to start diving in and just doing a little bit of research about the terminology. Because once you get the terminology down, it's going to all start making sense. And you'll start to pick up all the other stuff. There are a lot of people out there that have been explaining blockchain to you, explaining NFTs, and they've been giving you way too much information, and sometimes that scares you and you don't want to take a step because of all that. You think, oh, I'm never going to be able to understand this, and you just give up, you know. And an example that I use is we all have TVs in our home, and on the wall, you know, you take a remote, you turn on the TV, you understand how the TV turns on. Imagine somebody coming to you and trying to explain everything that's happening behind the TV. You don't really need to know all that. You understand the value of the TV. So that's why I say you need to just dump into the space and start to figure out the lingo. Because once you start figure out the lingo, everything else you read is going to start making sense. And then if you want to learn about what's going on behind the TV, cool. You know, all the wires that's happening behind the TV, you don't need that right now. All you need to know is the basics. And then you'll understand that there's real value in this world that's happening, you know?
Cam, you've been very, it's kind of interesting. Like I said, you don't like to be seen. You might fight me on that. But you stay very to yourself. You have a very conservative, as far as when you get out there in the public, you don't go out there a lot, you don't say a lot, like you said. And you seem to, you had to be forced to be more social on social. Why was that? I'm just curious. And then I want you to tell me your Gary Vee story. But why were you so like, I don't really want to be a part of this whole social thing, man?
Now, if people could think back, I was one of the people that was really a first adopter of social. You know, I was on MySpace before most people had a huge account on there. I was on, you know, Black Planet before that. I was on every single platform. I was always like super engaged. I had the biggest forum board of any artist with a massive email list. And people used to talk to me on my website. I used to do live streams before live streaming, all that. So I've had a long relationship talking to fans and directly with people. But, you know, sometimes, man, when you get fans, it's like short for fanatics, you know, and it can be some kind of overreach. People just lean in too much. They want to know everything. And it's just like every day, everybody's on that hamster wheel of trying to stay relevant for those people. And you start to just always have to keep up the content, always have to do this, and always have to try to impress this invisible person on the other side of your phone. And once it could be draining, it really can, you know, and sometimes you can lose your way, you know, and understand like what's your why. So I took some time to kind of just figure out what's my why, like, why am I doing this? You know what I'm saying? And that was with everything, not just with social, with rap. You know, remember I used to be in a club, I used to be in there, people would be smoking, drinking, dancing. I did none of the three. So I'd be in there like, why am I here every day? Like, what am I doing? You know, so once I kind of did that little mental exercise with myself, I started realizing what I really cared about. And I'm a person that's a results-driven person. I care about getting results. So I focus more on the work and less about talking. So the people that say I don't talk now, it's ironic because back in the days, they used to say I talk too much, that I preach too much. When I was singing on the mixtape, they said I sing too much. That's what I got all the time. And now it's like everybody's doing it. So to me, it was just like step back, see what's happening. And once I stepped back a little bit, I started liking being there. You know, like it's a more peaceful place with all these voices and random Twitter trolls in your comments. You know what I'm saying? Like there's some people that will let that ruin their lives, like not me. Nobody can take my joy, you know what I'm saying? Nobody could wake up today and say something that just, you know, makes me feel upset for a month. You know, even when it seems like I'm doing it, because I do respond to people sometimes, like, nah, they're not gonna get to me like that. You know, we have control over this stuff, right? So I think it's a better place to be. You know, it keeps all of the noise out, all of the nonsense, the people that pop up because they realize you're alive, or the people that, you know, see you on Versus and think you're popping now. Like, I don't do all that. Like, you know, it's real easy for me, man. I feel like life could be a lot easier when we just take the time to curate our experience a little bit better, you know? So
I feel you on that. It seems like two people probably are responsible for some of this social interaction that you do now more so than, again, they're not the creators of your social work, because like you said before, you already had your own website, you were on MySpace back in the days, but getting you back acclimated to being a part of it again, it seems like there's two, I want to say there's seminal important people in your, at least they brought your attention to like, you know what, let me explore this a little bit more than I have been. And which is interesting because Combos is a totally social networking, yeah, that you've been dealing with. But explain that there, those two things, those two human beings, and then I want to jump into Combos, which is also a very socially active platform, bro.
Yeah, so it's actually, I had went to Gary Vee to talk about Combos. So I was in his office, and he's got a huge office, all these employees. And I'm in there talking about Combos. He's giving me his thoughts about startups and, you know, social media, et cetera, et cetera. So he takes my phone and he's showing me all this stuff. And I'm looking at it like, okay, cool. This guy got a lot of information. And then I leave. And when I leave, a day later, I look at my Instagram. And it was like weird. I didn't know what was going on. Like, why does my Instagram look like this? I wasn't following anybody on Instagram. I didn't understand what it was like to follow somebody on Instagram. And Gary Vee took my phone and followed himself. I was trying not to laugh. I was like,
that's not a gangster right there. Like, he like, I'm gonna get him to follow me by following me while I have.
Yeah, this. I don't know if he does.
I'm not even mad, about
but he did it to me.
Right.
And I was like, oh, when I realized what was going on, that it was nothing but Gary Vee on my feed. I was like, oh wow, he just followed his own account. So I could have done one of two things. I could have kept following him or unfollow him. And I decided to keep following them. And I was like, you know what? I remember talking to E40 about the story. And then E40 was like, yeah, man, you Hollywood, man. You can't be on Instagram not following nobody. You think you like some higher echelon person. And, you know, you think you too cool. And I hate people that be on there trying to look like they get their aesthetic, like they too big to follow people. And he was like, yeah, you need to follow people. And then I followed E40. And then that's began the journey of me following people. You know, I still don't follow a lot of people, but yeah, that's kind of how it kind of it happened. So
how's a guy that went from being one of the first adopters of some social media platforms goes to pulling back and not being a part of social media platforms, and then creates or help create a social media platform? I just want to know how that happened, because I never really asked you how Combos got started and why you got into it so big.
Yeah, it was really about my relationship with social over all these years. You know, I think for public figures, it's very, very tough because, you know, fans want to talk to you. They look up to you. They want to hear all kinds of things from you. But it's like talking to 1,000 chefs at the same time. You know, there's a lot going on. Sometimes the platforms encourage people to be abusive and troll. If somebody says something crazy to me and I ignore that person, the friends come in and retweet them, you know, and it gives them power. And I feel like a lot of these platforms kind of give people the power to be that person that they wouldn't be in real life, because nobody comes up to me and says all the stuff that people might say on social to me in real life, you know. But when you're sitting behind an avatar, you get this special superpower boost of super villain powers. I don't know what it is, but you know, I'm not gonna act like all the engagement is bad on social. There's a lot of positive stuff, but I felt like, you know what, I'm gonna build a social platform and try to create a different way of doing this. I feel like there's something special about the face-to-face communication, the way me and you have a conversation in real life. Like, how can we make something that's as close to that as possible and make it so that, you know, people just want to share information and have conversations and just remove some of that toxic stuff that happens on social. So it's a very difficult task, but you know, that's our attempt to do that with Convos, and we're loving the start we have so far. We got a lot of influencers and celebs that come in and host rooms and have conversation with fans, where fans are sending in video responses. Everything's organized, curated, and it's a very organized way of having conversations. And my office hours are always open. I know people be asking, like, where Chamillionaire at? I ain't seen them. I'm on Convos all the time. My office hours is always open. People ask me for investment advice. They're pitching to me. I'm having rooms about ratchet stuff. Like, we doing it all on there. So if anybody's watching this and they ask me where I'm at, you know where I'm at now, you know?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk more about Convos, because it seems like y'all went through a couple of different changes. There are steps now. You can't just download the app and you're in. There's a couple of steps of things that you guys need. And I thought it was interesting that you make it where they have to check out, they have to make a video of themselves. And then there's a process where they have to be allowed in. What's that all about?
Yeah, so right now there's a wait list. Anybody that has an iOS app, iPhone, you can get in quicker. Right now, the wait list is very long. We got thousands of people on Android that are waiting to get in, but we don't have as many resources to bring in all those Android people. There's so many different devices. So that'll come a little bit sooner. But for now, anybody that has an iOS or an iPhone, you can download Convos, the Convoz. And when you get on the wait list, on you're gonna be asked to create an avatar and create a profile video. And the reason why we ask you to create a profile video is because we just want to know you're a real person. That's it. You know, when you get over that hurdle of like, oh, I don't want to be on camera. Like, this might not be the app for you. You know, these are about people that want to have conversations. There's people like me. There's people like Killer Mike, people like Bun B, people like E40 that are in this app. We just did a room with Bone Thugs. We got, 3-6 Mafia. We got like all kind of people having conversations in here, but you got to put your face on it. This isn't the app where you hide behind, anonymity and say some crazy stuff to people. It's the app where you have real genuine conversations with people about different topics. So that's the reason why we do that, just to make sure you're a real person. And if you do that and you sign up, then you're going to get in pretty quickly. And, and the reason why we do that, the real reason, is because we're about building community. You know, you want to start off building a real community that cares, that's, you don't want anything to come in and torch that whole experience. And then later on, we'll loosen that up. But for now, we're real focused on building community. And I learned that from my time during the forum boards. I remember they used to hack my forum board. They used to find people's addresses. They used to be fighting like crazy. Record labels used to be calling me, telling me delete posts. It was just so crazy, you know? So, luckily nowadays in my Convos days, I don't deal with all that craziness. It's a nice experience and I'm on there all the time, you know?
How long has it been that you all have been doing Convos, Ken? This is what, maybe 3-4 years in?
I don't even have an answer to that. I feel like it's been forever. But originally it was an asynchronous product. And then we learned that the best way to have conversations is almost live. Like, I mean, you're just talking and we're just your turn, my turn. Like, and it just so happened that we were developing a live product. And then when the pandemic happened, everything kind of, synced up and the world started realizing the value of being live. And then we felt like we had something magic with that, because I remember before I used to talk on the app and it was a lot of work. I'd have to see a video, watch it, respond, stop, send it to them. And now you just turn that thing on and just start talking. And people will join your room, they can jump up before people can be on the stage. It's a really cool thing. Next thing you know, I'll be talking in the app and I'll be on there and be like, all right, I got 30 minutes. And then 2 hours later, I'm still on there. A lot of times when you were hitting me, that's what I was doing. I was in a room, I'm like, man, I gotta jump down,
So there's different rooms that people can go and they can see like different conversations happening and they can just go jump into those rooms and see what those conversations are. But they're live, actually live conversations going on.
Yep. And they can create a room if they want about a topic and, people will come in and have a conversation with them. They'll meet some new people, So if you're a domain expert in something or you want to learn about something, there's people that open it up and talk about their business. It's people that teach. It's some people that do motivation and affirmations. It's people that just want to talk about the jokes, and there's people that want to talk about the gossip for today. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like a reflection of, our society. That's what happens on social, but we're just trying to do it in a way where it's just not as abusive. And what I find is that when people put their face on the camera, they're far less likely to do all of the, abusive stuff you see when people are anonymous,
I know And this is probably a question you won't like, but I know a lot of times what people want to do, they might hear something salacious or something cool, and they might take something that happened on Convos and they want to take it and then they want to post it somewhere else, or they might put it on one of the other blogs. Are you guys going to be cool with that? You know, because it seems like that's what happens with whatever social medium that gets created. It turns into, oh, Cam was talking to this person, he says this, now it's on all the blogs, and they take the pieces and chunks that they actually recorded, however they recorded, from off of Convos or whatever. So, you know, I guess what's your thoughts on that kind of stuff? Because I see it happens with every social medium that's out there now.
Yeah, you called it right there. It happens with every social media platform, and that's because there's nothing you can do about it. The truth is, it's social for a reason, you know? And even if we try to put something up to prevent people from recording or taking your clip, people could pull out their phone and just film the screen and do that. They're gonna get it if they want it. So I think the rule of thumb is to operate the way I operate. You don't see me saying nothing crazy. I'm pretty confident about what I say. You know, I try to stay out of, you know, conversations that might be a little bit too toxic. You know, I try to, you know, talk with intention. You know, I think about all the times that somebody has passed, and then all of a sudden everybody goes back and looks at all the content that they created. Think about Nipsey Hussle. He was here dropping gems the whole time. So I operate like that in life. You know, every time I'm speaking with intention about something that I think I would like to be in the world. So I think we should treat our social media accounts like that. Sometimes it's real easy to feel like you're in this bubble by yourself and just be throwing up random thoughts. And then later on, you see something happen with a basketball player, or you see a rapper where they go back to their old tweets. You know what I mean? Like, we all make mistakes, but I think you got to treat social like that with intention. You got to be really smart. There's always people watching. And even if they're not watching right now, they're watching later. You know, when you become who you're going to be, you become greater, they're going to go find that. So I think like that all the time, and I can't control the world. And the one thing I'll say is that, you know, it's something very intimate about talking with people in this kind of setting. You know, when you get in there, I've seen people, we had a conversation with Meta World Peace. Man, Meta World Peace was telling us all this stuff. I ain't going to lie, I was about to go straight to the internet and post it. He was like, yo, bro, like, don't make me go viral. He was saying some dope stuff, but I understand why he was doing that, because when you get in there, you kind of having a conversation with the homies. Next thing you know, you just talking. It's something magical about that. You know, I had a room with me, Bun B, Killer Mike, and Slim Thug. We was all up there. People didn't even want to reply and send in messages, because we was like, why y'all ain't sending in responses? They was like, man, we felt like we was
listening to y'all.
But you know, all of us together, we was like, yo, we was really trying to talk to the fans, but the fans was just watching. They was like, nah, we ain't trying to interrupt this. So that's the type of serendipity and moments that we're trying to create. And you know, hopefully people will find value in it. It's still a long road. Startups are very tough. I'm on calls with developers every day. I'm like, you know, going out fundraising. I'm doing all the stuff that a real startup founder does. But I love this journey because it helps me be able to go out and give advice to other people and tell them what to do, tell them the pitfalls of fundraising. Because, you know, a lot of people in our community are building all kinds of businesses and trying to figure out how to get money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a person that has been pretty good at getting money, but I could keep all this information and take it to the grave with me. I'd be like, let me just drop it off on the people. So that's what I decided I want to do. I'm going to be Mr. Miyagi out here. I'm going to give the game to everybody. You can take it or not take it, but you can't say that I wasn't trying to give you whatever I got, you know?
Now, I will say this. You do send the information to some of the homies about crowdfunding. Some of that stuff seems like you got to really have a couple of dollars to be a participant in the crowdfunding stuff, too. And the other thing about that, too, is you may get into something that, the truth of the matter is, it may not turn out to be that big thing.
Yeah, that's true. But nah, you don't got to have all that money like that, man. People say this all the time. When they think about investing, they think, oh, man, I got to get all this money. I got to, you know, stop. I got to sacrifice. I can't buy anything else. I can't buy my shoes. I can't buy my Jordans. But that's not true. Investing means spending what you can afford to lose. And we all have things that we have purchased that we could afford to lose that money. Even Jordans, something as simple as that. There's a lot of people talk about, oh, I can't invest. I ain't got no money. But they got 1,000 pairs of Jordans in their closet, you know? Like these $100 transactions, these $200 transactions, you could actually put that in a company, and that company potentially could make you money. Like, there are crowdfunding platforms like one called Republic.co, Republic.co, you can go to that website, and they allow you to invest $100, $200 in a startup. And yeah, not all companies are going to win. But guess what? When they say it's time to play the lottery, everybody going to go play, and none of y'all win in the lottery. None of us know somebody that won a lottery, but guess what? Every year, y'all going, y'all pulling off, scratching, all that. And I'm not saying that, you know, there's something wrong with that, because I do think the idea of hope keeps people excited, you know what I'm saying? But I think that there's a real thing in front of you that a lot of people are really getting rich off of. All the people courtside that y'all see them games, they all invest, every single one of them. If you're not doing it, you need to be planting these seeds in your backyard right now. Planting these seeds, and eventually one of them might be a dud, but the other one might grow and be a big tree that has, you know, apples and oranges on it, and it feeds your family. So right now is the time to just dive in. I'm telling you, like, I thought I was going to be back rapping immediately. I was like, oh, let me go see what this tech thing is about, an investing thing. And I got over here and I saw, it's like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, bro. It's like, imagine me going and chasing a record label for advance. Like, what? Like, you know how many billions and billions of dollars is out here that's not going to Black founders? Why would I go over there and beg them when this is like, it's like jumping over a pile of money to jump on a dollar bill? Like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. So I think we need way more minorities, more women, more Black folks just to come in here and just, you know, there's opportunity for you. You know, build a company, start one. If you're entrepreneurial, if you want to get into the art of investing, there's platforms like Go to Republic. You don't even got to start investing on a platform. Just sign up for their mailing list and just see the emails they send and all the different type of companies. You'll learn about the future and all the different type of companies that's out here killing it. I was in a self-driving car 8-9 years ago before everybody saw them. I was in, you know, all kind of companies, storage industry companies. You know, I seen the VR glasses. I seen it all because I just dived into this industry. It's some amazing stuff.
Why was there no fear in you? Like I said earlier, you know, we talk about there's a fear with people and losing money and things of that nature. Cam, why was there no fear for you to say, I'm going to put my money in this? Because, yeah, you made a lot of money doing what you were doing with the music, but you probably made more money, you know, being in this tech zone that you're in. What made you say, you know what, I'm okay with taking this pile of cash and putting in this and let's see what happens?
The reason why is because a lot of us watched our parents and our parents' parents struggle, worked a 9-to-5 every day, and then that cycle continues from generation to generation. And you're out there trying to make ends meet. You know, Sally Mae is ripping you off. You feel like the government ain't giving you the PPP loans. And there's a lot of people out here that said, you know what, I'm going to take life into my own hands and be an entrepreneur. And an entrepreneurial approach is very good because now it gives you some kind of autonomy and power over your life, right? But then it's people out here that are entrepreneurial like me, but then also are planting these seeds in other companies. And all those entrepreneurs are out there creating greatness, but they're working and they're building value for companies. And I'm making money while we're sitting here. That's a different kind of relationship. When I was in the music industry, I was running around. It was rappers that was chasing shows all day. And that's kind of what rappers do. And they tell you, you don't make money off your albums, just go do shows. What happens if you hurt your leg and you can't do shows? The money stops. Like, why would you ever want the money to stop? And I was looking around to see the people that money does not stop. And it's the people that are investors, the people that own a piece of some other platform. And when I realized what the returns look like, you know, there's a story about some school, you can Google it. They invested in Snapchat. And I think they together, the father went and convinced the kids to the school to invest $15,000 in Snapchat. And the school decided to do it because all the young kids in the school were all aware of Snapchat early. They were using it. And then they made about $28 million in return, all of them, you know? And they just saw something that was people were adopting and decided to make an investment, which was a risk because $15,000 is a lot of money. But I assume there was a bunch of people that kind of put in money and everybody kind of spent what they could afford to lose. And then in return, $28 million. There's a story of Andreessen Horowitz who invested $250,000 in Instagram and they made $78 million in return, you know? When that company got bought for $1 billion. Now, y'all think about them type of returns. You know, there are people that have invested in Uber and at one point made a 3,600x return. That means think in your mind what you would have potentially invested in Uber and then multiply that by 3,600 and then see what you get. You're talking millions. You know what I'm saying? Like, man, and I know some people out there thinking like, oh, I can never get to them companies. They're all around you. When you walk around and see all these businesses everywhere, they're everywhere. There's a company starting every single day. So we could continue to just buy stuff with that. You know, you're making an investment. You're making an investment when you buy all the, you know, Valentine's Day cards and candies and Halloween outfit. You're making an investment, but the reward you get is you put that thing on and then somebody tells you you look fresh. So that was the reward you got. But you could be investing in something that might take a little bit longer, but when that comes back, it's going to potentially make you money. The Halloween outfit don't make you money. I know society gonna put the commercials up and teach you to do all that type of stuff. I'm not even saying don't do it, but I'm saying find a balance. Do this stuff with that, and it could change your life, you know?
Cam, there's no way I can let you go without asking you this question. You know I'm gonna ask it. I'm
powwow.
I'm forced by the community at large. The powwow Chameleonaire reunion album and tour. What day can we
tour in there?
Huh?
You do the tour in there too?
Listen, man, when can we expect the powwow Chameleonaire reunion tour and album and action?
All right, listen, man. I'm gonna try to. All right, listen. So, man, I know what they want, Hatter. I don't think they want what they think they want, man. They keep on trying to stay in the past. They want to stay in the past. They want me to create that feeling of nostalgia for them. That moment when you was in high school and you was beating on the tables and y'all was freestyling and you was in love with that one girl and you got your first pair of Jordans and, you know, that environment and that stuff that was coming out and Cash Money was hot and, you know, No Limit was hot and it makes you feel a certain way. And you want me to recreate that feeling, that Texas culture when, you know, you saw your first Buick on Swangs, you know, and it had the candy paint, or you saw Lil Kiki pull up to that club on the south side and you were in the parking lot. You want us to create that feeling, but I'm trying to tell you, it's impossible. It's very impossible. There's so many artists that if you pay attention, Andre 3000, Rihanna, all of them, they're all kind of saying the same thing. They're not trying to go back and recreate that same thing. It's a lot of pressure, and I know the fans want it, but I think it's impossible to recreate it. Think about all the people that came back that tried to do that new, you know, We're Back album. When does that ever succeed? It never does. Because you hear it and you're like, something just doesn't sound like it used to sound. That's right, because you're not in love with that person no more. You don't have that first pair of Jordans no more. You're older, you got kids now, you got bills, everything's a little different. I understand the evolution of life. And because of that, I try to just stay focused on the future. So I know that's a long way to answer your question. I rock with Paul. I think we should do something. I just think that the mentality that people have to recreate the past, I'm just not about that. I'm about the future. And it's got to be something new. And if I give them something completely new, they might, I think they'll say, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. Yeah, you're right. That's what the world is about. It needs to be like that. I can't recreate that feeling for them. I know you don't want
to hear it. It kind of sound like you saying no, so I'm not really sure.
I'm not saying no. I mess with Paul. Like,
do you want to need a futuristic? We need to go get Timberland or something? What we got to do, man? What we need to do?
You said what?
I said, what we need to do? Go get Timberland? Because you said you need futuristic. We need to go get Pharrell.
No, I'm not talking about futuristic music like that. Definitely not. It still got to be the culture and be the sound. But
okay,
it's a new way to do it, man. It's a new way. This is what they want. If you go poll them and ask them, they're going to be like, we want the mixtape Messiah back. They want me to go back and drunk on everybody's beats, go grab Drake's beats and rap on them, drop the mixtapes, go take them to Cleveland, Ohio, and wake up Texas and drop them off on CDs with my signature. Like, bro, I don't even got a CD player on my computer, man. None of my cars got CD players in them. I don't know how I'm going to play that.
Okay, let me talk for the people. So what if we make it futuristic, we deal with maybe a cool NFT place, maybe do something in the metaverse, drop the album on an NFT or something like that? Can we do that? Just so we, won't be the nostalgia that we once had, but it'll be this new creation with two of our favorites from the city of H-Town.
Now we talking. I can't get them the yes that they want because I don't know what I'm gonna do, honestly. But I will say I'm not done. I got some stuff up my sleeve. I am gonna create a moment at some point. And I feel like, I remember this one time, I think David Banner or somebody said this, that you kind of gotta go through life and live life so that you have enough to talk about, you know? And if you think about The Sound of Revenge, they heard an album that was my first debut album, but what that album was, the culmination of everything leading up to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I lived life, I did a lot. We went through little beefs and all that was the energy that was in that album. You know, so I know it's been a little bit of time. I do have a lot more to talk about, but I feel like the best albums are like that. You know, there's a lot of people just throw out albums, but you think about those classics, the stuff that you loved, it was because of all of that stuff was around it, you know? Look at Sade. She don't even, like, I don't know. Maybe that's the reason why she doesn't release as much, because she's out living life, trying to find a way to tell a real new and unique story, you know?
Well, so, Sade don't release albums until she's devastated. I hate to say that, when she's hurt.
But that's deep, though. That's deep.
Man, she's been wounded, and then, you know, all that pain and frustration. It seems, I could be wrong, but I once was told by somebody that worked at a label that, you know, she releases, you know, at that time. And she's in no particular rush at this point. I think she's done what she's done. I don't think Sade has ever done any, I don't think she's ever done any collaborations. And there have been several people who have tried. I know Jay-Z, I think, made an attempt. I know Drake made an attempt, and Sade was like, nah, son.
So, yeah, but even now, there's somebody listening to this like, who's that? You know what I'm saying? Because time moves on, and new people come in, new young blood, and it's just the way it is. When you come back, you can't just be like, hey, I'm back, all my fans, y'all just fall in pocket. You got to find a way to build new fans. You're going to lose some. Like, I understand the evolution of this thing. I know there's a lot of people out there telling me that you got a bunch of fans, Cam, and they're on the internet, and they got military tattoos, but I recognize that, you know, in order to achieve the level of success that a lot of my fans would want me to achieve, because there's fans out there that they'll be mad if I just throw something out because they want to see it be successful. They don't want it just to come out.
They want you to win.
Successful so they can be proud of what they represent, right? So it takes a lot. It takes, think about all the runs that we did. We went to every radio station. People saw us be successful. They don't understand how much work we're putting in. That's why it's hard for me to even look at new artists when they send me all these demos, because half of them, 99% of them, they're not going to do that. They think it's just about putting out a song and just like, I'm hot. Like, you know, like Mike Jones was a hella marketer, bro. That dude was, I saw that dude for the first time outside of a gas station trying to give me his demo. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's like, he was hustling. There's people that's like, oh, I rap better than Mike Jones. Mike Jones is like, he was coming up with the concepts. He was who, like he knew what he was doing. You know, so you got to really think about it. Look at Soulja Boy. There's a lot of people that mad at Soulja Boy is a grind. He hustling. He been the whole time. That dude was putting his songs up on Napster with other people's names on it. I mean, with, you know, you would search 50 Cent and then you would wait for the song to download, the song would come and it would be Soulja Boy. I was always seeing this dude Soulja Boy tell him on the songs. I was like, what the heck is going on with this guy? But he knew how to manipulate that platform. And instead of putting Soulja Boy and title it Soulja Boy, he would title it Britney Spears. And then you would download Britney Spears and it'd be like, Soulja Boy tell him. I was like, man, this guy. So it was like, it's not like it's just destiny. It's like, man, it was a lot of hard work for a lot of these rappers, man. You know, and people now, because we have the phones at the, you know, at the tip of our fingers, it feels like, oh, all I got to just do is this, you know? So I think you got to take that same Texas screwed up click, switch a house, grind to the social media platforms.
Are you still listening to a lot of music, Cam, or you don't even really have
Absolutely.
Days?
Absolutely. I listen to a lot of Afro beats. That's my number one genre of music. But I try to keep my ear enough to the streets to know. You know, like I know about the Lil Durks, I know about all the young rappers, I know about the Joyner Lucas and the lyricism, I know about the Rhapsodies, and I know about the, you know, there's so many different rappers that I know about. And I'll see a rapper and they'll introduce themselves to me and I'll be like, come on, man. Like and they'll be shocked that I know who they are, you know? Because, you know, you always got to be a student of the game. And I was coming up, I used to know about the Wu-Tang Clan, cannabis, there's so many different inspirations. So now I listen to enough of it to know. I can't say I listen to everybody's albums, because I'm not even the type of person that's just gonna sit there and listen to your whole album. I don't wanna hear this kid, you know, I honestly don't. You know, but I think there's a lot of dopeness that people create in moments. So I'm more of a playlist person nowadays. And I like finding new stuff that's dope. You know, when I be on my vacations, I'll be listening to all kind of playlists. I try to make the perfect playlist every time, you know? So often you can find a dope record from somebody that you never heard. And I like that. And I'm not an anti-new rapper thing. There's a lot of copying that goes on, you know, where people sound exactly like another rapper. I don't personally like it, but I understand it. You know, I understand what they're trying to do and the playlists and how they work. And, you know, it's a different type of program director out there now. And the big, you know, DSPs and all these platforms, they're now programming all of this digital music. And you kind of got to fit into a wave. So a lot of people will see a Drake or a Bryson Tiller or somebody, you know, gain prominence, and then they try to make something that's a little bit like that so they can fit in that playlist or that, you know, that ecosystem, and it works for a lot of people. So I understand it, but, you know, I miss a lot of the originality, you know.
When, how long is it going to be before you actually put something out, Ken?
I honestly don't even think about it. I just get inspired sometimes. It just happens, man. Like I didn't think I was gonna do the verses. It just happened. I'm not thinking too much about it. And I know the fans don't like to hear that because they might think that I have some kind of hidden album right now ready to release at midnight tonight, you know? But nah, man, sometimes you just wake up and it's just like a moment inspires you. Like, I remember when Royce da 5'9" did that BET cypher and then he was like, hi, Rihanna, and he was trending. Like, I remember like watching that and throwing my remote down, like getting up and just like, I'm writing verses right now. Like, that was hard, you know? Like, I didn't expect that. He just said something that made me be like, all right, I'm gonna get some verses in my head, you know? So I still write a lot. I got verses. Every time I hear a beat melody, I'm you know, I hear it in my head all the time. So I feel like I never stop. But as far as releasing a full project, I just gotta be inspired, man. I don't even, album, like, do people still listen to those, man?
I don't think so. I think we live in a single, we're in a single culture right now, but things may change in the future. I don't know. Can't give me three things for people who are just beginning investors or they don't got big money. We're talking about people, they got, you know, they part-time jobs. They don't, you know, families, they could be a kid in college. They could be working at, you know, the whatever fast food joint, but you know, they want to get into investing. They want to learn more about money and doing those kind of things. What, give me some advice for these young folks, brother. And old folks too, there's a whole bunch of old folks out there. They looking right now saying, man, I'm broke and I'm trying to come up like everybody else. What can I do?
Yeah, so I know the internet can be like a big ocean of all this information. It's very tough to get on there and then find the right information. People always say, oh, just research it. But it's like, what does that mean? You can find so much and it can just overwhelm you. I think first, it's like, just understand the value of investing first. Because I think a lot of people just don't really understand the value of it. They hear it all the time. They don't really understand how it could change their life or why they must and they have to be doing it. Again, go back to what I said about you going through the emotions 9 to 5 every day. You're working very hard. You can still work very hard, but you got to make your money work for you. Your money is sitting in the bank right now. The minute you put it in the bank gets rid of it. They're investing your money. They're making money on top of your money. You know, when you come back, that money, whatever they give you, that's not even your money. They just pulled something and gave it to you, you know? So I need you to understand that if the bank is doing it, if everybody else is doing it, you need to be doing it too. So first, it's the why. And understand that. And then second is like, all right, where do I go to research this? Where do I go to get information? I think start by trying to just understand the language of investing, right? There's different types of investing. There's public investing, where some people invest in the stock market. And, you know, you see all the companies, Apple, Google, and people are going to different stock platforms and purchasing shares of the company. And there's private investors. You know, people like me that find an early stage startup or early stage company. And I bet on them early, put a little money in, and as they grow and they raise additional capital and they build their companies, then I get a return if they're able to hit the promised land, you know? And that's a great job for me because I get to talk to a lot of founders. I get to learn about their visions. People pitch me on all kinds of companies. So if you're not, you know, a celebrity or somebody out there that has all the access, I would just focus on trying to start going to, you know, tech events. There's all kinds of digital tech events that you can get on to kind of learn the lingo. There's all kinds of conferences that you can go to, you know, TechCrunch. And I would recommend Afrotech. I really love Afrotech. You know, that's when it happens in the Bay Area. But now they've been doing it digitally. They have a whole metaverse where all these people get in there with avatars and it's 10,000 plus Black folks and people of color in there watching people talk about companies, people from Facebook, people from everywhere, early stage startups, all talking about companies. If you're not aware of Afrotech, go follow them, afrotech.com, blavity.com, republic.co, which I mentioned. That's one of the good crowdfunding platforms that allows people to invest small amounts in capital and just consume the information. There's no cheat code to this. Nobody's going to be able to do an interview and just tell you everything you need to know. You're going to have to take the work to dive in and start to learn the lingo. So start by just learning the lingo. And once you get there, then everything else will start making a little bit more sense. When you watch CNBC or some stock channel and you see that little ticker moving at the bottom and all that stuff looks like hieroglyphics, it'll start making a little bit more sense to you. You know, when you see that Facebook is launching a metaverse, it'll start making a little bit more sense to you. You want to understand where this world is going. When you see that Uber drive up or that Lyft car drive up in the future and there's nobody in it and it's driving by itself, you would have saw that change about to happen before it happened. You know, you got to start diving in here. It's some really special stuff. If you're older and you got kids, get your kids involved in it. I don't care if it's learning how to code, getting involved with trying to build a startup, a company. There's so much money. You know, we're younger, you know, you talk to your sister or family member and they say they want to be a cosmetologist or something. Or, you know, they want to do hair, they want to do this. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you ever ask them how much does that person make, then nobody really thought about that. It's just like, ah, you know, I'm just going to do this. And I feel like I'll be able to sell enough hair to get rich. But then there's somebody else that goes and builds a hair business. You know, there's a guy named named Sean that has a company called Maven, and he sells hair, you know, to Black women, you know, and it's a company that's like a great company doing millions of dollars in revenue. They are, you know, killing it. And so you can build a technology company around a thing that you're passionate about, and you just got to have the confidence to believe that you can do that. You know, there's a lot of us that build small businesses that stay in the family and it brings reoccurring revenue to you and your family, but you could build something that could grow massively and you know, pay off and make your family wealthy if you think about it. That's what a lot of people in the tech space are doing. They're organizing those small businesses in a different way and building companies where other people come in and give them money. They raise capital, they hire people, and they just build really massive businesses. And I'm watching that happen over and over. I invested in some companies that were small companies, and now some of them got bought for billions of dollars. I made a good amount of money off of that. And now I just chase those companies all day. So if you are young, African-American, Black women, they are over-indexing on all the companies that are being started right now. Like, let's go. Let's get you some investors. Let's put some money in your pockets. Let's go hire those people that you have historically have not had on your team. Let's get you in some of these rooms and these people that have been investing in people that don't look like you. Let's get them to cut you a check. And then now you have the resources to go out and build something great, you know? But you gotta do the work. You gotta study this, man. You know, I left rap. I'll leave with this last thing. When I left, I didn't leave rap, but when I started to do an entrepreneur in residency at this venture capital firm, I remember the first post that somebody posted on the website where they did a press release at was like, man, Chameleonaire is an idiot. He left the dream job that we all want to work a 9-to-5 like the rest of us. So that person did not understand that what I was doing was diving into this ecosystem to get the game, the information, that's where the wealth is at. And you cannot take that out of my head, what I learned over the past few years. Like, are you kidding me? That's going to help me be successful in every endeavor that I try to do from this point on. Anything, even music, all the stuff that I learned. It's like, man, and along the way, I'll make some money too. So I think there's a lot of people out there, they start really being strategic about this. You can make money in the investment space. I know people tell you it's risky. It's risky to be a rapper too. It's risky to, you know, walk out of here without, you know, awareness of what side of town you're on. Like, it's a lot of risks, but, you know, I think you guys take some calculated risks and invest in this one, and you should.
I like it. Chameleonaire, military man. I appreciate you, man. I know you don't take the time to do this
kind of stuff. I like the new hatter, man. This hatter is the hatter I like.
What's the hatter you don't like?
I mean, I liked the hatter before, but this is the better hatter. Yeah, this hatter right here. I actually thoroughly enjoy talking to hatter. I really do.
I guess I could say the same thing for Cam. The other Cam, he made some real cool records for us back in the days. But yeah, this Cam right here, I like. But you know what? This is what happens. Everyone gets older and everyone gets wiser and hopefully make better decisions. Now, I was always older than you and always making better decisions and always wiser, but.
Lying.
Yeah. But it's great that we're able to sit back and have fun and laugh about the old times and look at where you are now. And if I haven't said it before, I know I've said it before, and I say it to Paul as well, that ultimately, I'm just really, really proud of you guys, you know, just to see some guys come from the north side of H-Town and be in the situation that they were in to turn their lives around and look how they have enriched their family and friends to do some incredible things. Some of our folks, I know they're still with you right now to this day, still working. So you employ people from our community and they still there with you to this day. That's great. As I know we make jokes about it all the time, but the truth of the matter is, that's great. We both have given these opportunities to people who've gone on. They might not have had these opportunities had these things not happened the way that they did. So look at that, man. Look at you. Look at us. Oh, my
God. You get Hatter on Convos. He about to be on Convos.
Yeah, anytime.
Y'all can come talk to Hatter. He's a
welcome. I'm still trying to get him right now.
All you rappers, what you're not supposed to be doing. He's seen it all.
I'm still trying to get in, but, you know.
Are you in now?
I think I am in.
Yeah, see, I'm already on it like that.
I was sitting on standby for a long time. I guess I had to have a conversation with you first to get in. So everybody make sure you talk to Cam so you can get in.
lucky you didn't pull up in there earlier because I would have.
I was trying to because I know you was talking. You did some conversation that I want to be a part of. I see all the players in there too. Snoop Dogg is up in there.
Mia X, we got her coming this week.
I love Lecrae. Lecrae's doing things. Oh, you got Paul Willikin in there. Okay.
Paul Wall, yeah, you know.
Well, good. Well, again, man, I'm proud of you.
We're going to do one on Convos. I'm going to do one with Paul, probably, but I'm going to do one with me, Paul, and Hatter, too. So we're going to try to...
That's cool. That should be interesting. That brings back the... That takes us back to the old paid in full days.
Yeah. We need to bring Cat, Crazy Seed,
You should, man. And even if you don't do that, you still need to text Cat and say... How you doing, bro? Just to let them know you're thinking about them. Every now and again, right. A nice little text right. To let people know that you're thinking about them. Not to give them nothing, just to say, hey, man, hope all is well with you. But again, man, I'm really proud of you, man. It's great to see and hear all this wise information that you're giving people. I hope that the information that you're giving, I was trying to be really quiet so they could hear you. And hopefully they take to heart a lot of the stuff that you're saying. And I love what you're saying. Hey, man, start getting some information and learn the lingo. Don't even start doing anything. I like that. Because most people just tell you, hey, take some money and start doing this. Even I do that. But you know what? I think the great place to start is, why don't you learn the lingo of what that is, what you're investing in? I think that's an excellent place to start. Learn the lingo, then everything else will fall in the spaces that it should fall in. So,
you'll gain your confidence. That's what it's all about. I didn't have confidence when I first started, and now the confidence that I learned, everything that I needed to learn to get me started made me dive in. So, you know, if you feel like this is like a big swimming pool and you don't know how to swim, hint, hint.
he making fun of me, y'all, because I don't know how to swim. That's all right. And I saw him jumping off some 40-foot thing into some water. I'm like, man, I want to do that one day. I'm like Will Smith, though, man. I want to try some of these things, man. And I already told you, I jumped out the plane. When you gonna jump out the plane, bro?
See, now we ain't gotta do all that. Like, learning how to swim is like learning how to invest. You can do it. There's a lot of people that's doing it. They get real value in their lives, and we gonna get y'all all there. So hopefully this wasn't too much preaching. Y'all know I like to do this. I like to talk. I'm the Mr. Miyagi in the game right now. You can follow me on Instagram, but I'd rather you join me on Convos and have a real conversation. And we get to it, man. We can dive into the nuances of how you get to
tell them real quick, Cam. Tell them how they can join you on Convos. And I'm going to let that
Convos in the App Store, Convoz. Create a profile video just to let us know you're a real person. We'll let you in the app. And there it is. It's going to be history after that. You know, we're going to have a lot of great conversations. We've got a lot of influencers and celebrities in the roadmap. You'll be seeing content every week from different people jumping in, doing rooms, people talking about investing, people talking about, you know, versus battles, people talking about everything culturally that you see on social media, but more engaging and authentic way of doing it. So hope to see you there. I hope to have a conversation with you too, you know.
All right. Camilla Terry, man, Chameleonaire, I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much, young brother.
You already know. We got to do this every month, though.
Let's do it, man. I'm good, man. Just let me know when, Cam. I know you real, real busy. You much, much busier than me, you know.
I'm trying to talk now. You see me posting more on social.
I see you, man. You showed me a little bit of your life jumping off the pool. I didn't see no family photos. I know you
back to my grind. Back to my grind.
It's nice to see you still, you know, letting people know that you out there doing some things. So I'm excited about that.
You already know. Let's get it.
Keep dropping these gems, man. I'll talk to you soon, brother.
All right. Thank you, man.
Thank you.